All right, welcome to this week's version of the William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. This is Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler, who, along with the rest of the crew, we know they're Wolfpack faithful. They are down in Las Vegas checking out all the action. They are at tonight's Las Vegas Invitational that the Wolfpack will be playing in tonight at 7 p.m. They're there through the weekend to check out the Wolfpack Battle for the Cannon football game tomorrow, so they're gone. So I'll be hosting tonight's show with a longtime contributor who we haven't seen in a while but love to have on whenever we can, so we're really glad to have him here. Mr. Mark Shannon, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me out tonight, Josh. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's Black Friday, and of course, if you're avoiding all the hassles, the shopping and everything is also one of the biggest football and college basketball days of the year. Of course, college football is just amazing. It's a rivalry day. It seems like every team plays their arch rival. There's lots of stuff at stake between bowl bids, conference championships, and sometimes a team that just has three wins isn't going anywhere. Love nothing more than upset their rivals' chances at a title or whatnot. Those games are all over the place. We're checking out South Florida against UCF right now. UCF's up 14, and they can complete a second straight undefeated regular season by pulling that one off. A couple other games later that we'll get to, but full slate tomorrow as well. Huge games like Ohio State, Michigan, likely for the Big Ten title, possible play, probably a playoff elimination game. And these games dot the landscape everywhere. Later tonight, Oklahoma, West Virginia. Winner goes to the Big 12 title game against Texas. Loser out of the picture. Washington, Washington State for a berth in the Pac-12 title game. So great games everywhere in every sport. But, Mark, Wolfpack's obviously the big local news, so maybe we'll get into that one first tonight. The Las Vegas Invitational at 7 p.m. Orleans Arena in Las Vegas. This game's going to be on FS1, so anyone who's got a chance, it's on national cable. You can see the game, which is awesome. Nevada's going to play Massachusetts. Spread here is Nevada minus 14 with a total of 156.5, I think you mentioned. And as we know, Nevada is undefeated. They come in 5-0. With a margin of victory of 22 points per game. So not only is the Wolfpack so far beaten opponents, they're doing so handily. They've covered every game with the exception of yesterday's game where they ended up beating Tulsa 96-86, closed as about a 15-point favorite. And, Mark, from what I heard, there was actually some pretty decent action on Tulsa in that game. It's just one of those deals where word's out on the Wolfpack, like a lot of these teams. If you cover early and often, you're starting to look like a dominant team. They're going to make an adjustment to make sure that betting on this team doesn't just equal free money, right? So yesterday, I heard quite a bit that, hey, Tulsa's decent, they'll hang around. And from what I heard, honestly, I wasn't unable to watch the game, but I heard a good portion of the coverage right here on ESPN Radio, and it sounded as if the Pack pretty much had control of the game. Second half, it didn't seem as if they were ever really threatened, like it never became a two-possession game or whatnot, but they also never, completely overwhelmed them and pulled away. 10-point victory, you can't argue with that, but what are your thoughts on tonight's matchup?
Yeah, well, yesterday, let's go to that first of all. So it opens at 16 in the morning. Nevada gets the early money. It comes all the way back, goes off at 14. And you're right. They were never going to lose that basketball game yesterday. The problem is for Nevada is that they don't play great defense. And so the dog always has a chance to be around. I mean, Tulsa had two kids. One kid had 27 yesterday. Another one had 22. And so whenever – and, of course, Nevada is always going to be given points. So the dog always has a chance to be around. Having said that, today UMass is coming off a really good game. They had played terrible the entire year. They were good yesterday, of course, against an outmanned Southern Illinois team. I think tonight, Nevada last year in the spot, if you remember, Josh, they lost to USF at this same time down there. So I think that, of course, motivational-wise, of course, they ranked sixth in the country. Tonight, I like Nevada over UMass. I think UMass is kind of like a horse race. They bounced today after having a really good effort yesterday.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see about Massachusetts because they're trying to turn things around. I know a couple years ago, a younger coach took over. I believe his name's Matt McCall. And they had fired Derek Kellogg. Last year, it's interesting, though. Not much was expected of them at all. In fact, UMass was – they were expected to be one of the worst teams in the country. They were pretty poor early, but they turned it on late. Actually had a couple of upsets in A-10 play. Ended up winning 13 games. 13-20 was better than a lot of people expected. Had a decent core of talent coming back this year. Like you mentioned, I did some research as well. UMass is 4-2, but the four – with Southern Illinois being the notable winner against mostly vastly inferior opponents. The two losses, one is to Harvard, who makes the NCAA tournament here and there. So it's not exactly a real high level of competition they've beaten. But, however, they have a pretty decent roster. One of the guys I was researching comes back from last year. He's a legit conference A-10 candidate for player of the year. Lenore Pipkins averaging 21 points a game. And you mentioned right from the start, even in the exhibition games, the extra ones that didn't count, but for instance, the opening game against Washington that they actually lost on their home court, Coach Musselman's expressed some real reservations about the defense from the start. Like, hey, we're going to get in these shootouts. Just expect to beat people against a high level of competition. That can come back to bite you. One thing I noticed yesterday, though, I think Southern Illinois was just maybe the more, you know, publicly known team. But they were a 2.5-point favorite. And to be honest with you, I just jumped out. I got UMass plus 130 on the money line. I thought that might be a pretty decent value right there. They led from start to finish. So UMass, again, a young sort of building team, has a decent core back. But we talked about the spreads, are they adjusting too much? This is about the same one, you know, that we saw against Tulsa. And to me it seems correct, because even though, you know, UMass earned their way there, I'd like to think, you know, they're probably not as good a team as Tulsa right now.
Yeah, no, and good for you with the money line yesterday. That was a bet where you didn't have to worry about the entire day. Those are few and far between for the most part, right? We beg for those
exactly.
to go from wire to wire with the money line. So good for you. Yeah, and you're right. UMass is much better under the new coaching staff that they've had. I mean, they were just terrible for a couple of years. Bruiser Flint got in there, and, you know, the recruits weren't nearly as good. Again, athletically today, Nevada's going to give them some trouble. There's no doubt about that. And having lost the same time last year, I just think it's great motivation for Nevada. I actually have Nevada tonight. And, again, I'm not a homer. I'm not from the state of, you know, I'm not from here. So it's not that I'm ever a big homer. But I certainly like them in the spot tonight. Again, I think UMass was very good yesterday. But Southern Illinois didn't offer much resistance.
Right. And here we have just a couple stats here. Nevada is averaging 88.4 points per game. They got a top 20 offense in almost every category. Scoring offense is 19th in the country. 36% from three, which isn't great. That's middle of the pack nationally. Defensively, you know, about middle of the pack. But also keep in mind, Nevada has also played a couple, you know, marginal opponents to where defensive stats could be a little bit skewed. But the one guy who keeps coming up big and makes you wonder if UMass has an answer for, Jordan Caroline yesterday, right, just controls you know, the glass, but also whenever the opponent seems to make a run, he's always there to even things out. He had 25 points and 11 rebounds yesterday. Caleb Martin, 21 points. And Jazz Johnson, 20 points on 5 3-pointers. They're real happy with the contribution he's making. Mark, I'm sure you're aware of all the highly rated both recruits and transfers. Seems like Jazz Johnson was a guy who sort of slipped under the radar just in terms of the media and every you know, key player that Nevada was getting some press. But he's been huge so far. But in that system and with what they ask him to do, he comes in and basically played starters minutes. I mean, he was doing so well, I think he ended up with 34 minutes. But what a huge key. You know, the last couple of years, Nevada's always had those guys like sort of a designated shooter who just can really, you know, keep you in games. He's been huge so far.
Yeah, well, you know, that first night against BYU, and you can understand it now looking back, he didn't shoot the ball very well in that first half. He came out in the second half and got his legs underneath him, felt a whole lot better. And you're right, ever since then, he's just been shooting the ball much, much better for him. And they're going to need that, because as the games go on, and of course you get into conference, everyone gets a look at you. They're going to play zone against Nevada. There's no question, because Jordan Caroline, you brought it up. I'll tell you, he is my favorite. Okay, the guy is relentless. I mean, he throws the ball up off the backboard and he goes and gets it. He defensive rebounds. He'll play defense. He'll certainly block some shots. And again, offensively inside, he's ambidextrous. He uses both hands, and he's a very tough person to officiate because he draws so much contact. He creates most of the contact. And again, he wasn't great from the free throw line yesterday, but normally he is.
Right. I know exactly what you mean, too. He's tough. A brute like that, you never know. Is a guy flopping or no? When a guy that big contacts somebody, they go flying. He's one of those tough guys, right? Blocker, yeah. Charge, and he takes his share of abuse also. So
absolutely. He's a guy clearly you want on your side, right? I mean, you don't want to play against that guy in practice, and you certainly don't want to go against him in the game. But love his athleticism and love how hard he plays all the time.
All right, so again, tonight's championship game in the Las Vegas Invitational, Nevada Wolfpack playing Massachusetts Miniman. Nevada's 14-point favorite, total of 156.5. 7 p.m. tip-off, FS1 for your TV viewing purposes. And we know Ken Barler will be there front and center, so if you pay attention to the Kenny B Handicapping Facebook page, he'll probably post some photos and everything. I don't know if you pay attention to it, Mark, but last night he's down there. They're taking pictures with Doug Newth, another Nevada luminaries. I don't know how Ken does it, but he seems like he's everywhere.
Yeah, and there wasn't a big crowd yesterday, so they got some good seats. I know that they were excited about where they were sitting and watching all the action. Today, they get the chance to go watch the Texas-Michigan State game that's off, and Texas is off to a really good start against Michigan State there tonight. So,
all right, so let's change turn our attention to a different sport. Same, you know, university. Let's go with Wolfpack football. Tomorrow, of course, the big game is at UNLV. Battle of the Cannon, that's 6:30 p.m. So later one, 6:30 p.m., CBS Sports Network kickoff. So another one that's on TV. Make sure you can check out, follow the Wolfpack, see if they can get to 8 wins on this season. Mark, they've won 4 straight after a 3-4 start. UNLV 3-8 and has lost 7 of 8. And it's interesting, though, the one win in that span was a road win against San Diego State 2 weeks ago. Who would have thought that?
Right.
But what's funny is the projections for these teams were a little bit flipped, right? Coming into this year, actually, the over-under for UNLV team wins was set at 6. For Nevada, it was 5.5. But the reason being is UNLV had a somewhat decent team last year, a lot of young talent, and all of it was coming back. We know the quarterback, Armani Rogers, the running back, Lexington Thomas, who's still considered one of the most explosive guys in the country, fell apart pretty early for them. Rogers got hurt. They're inconsistent. The defense has always been an issue. But it just goes to show you that game against San Diego State. This team can rise up once in a while. UNLV's bizarre, right? This team that lost by 13 at San Jose State, the team that Nevada just beat. And you have to turn around and beat San Diego State, who's been in the Mountain West title game for the last couple of years. Sort of a hard team to figure out. But now Thomas, after being injured most of the year, or I should say Rogers, is back. Thomas is in the backfield as well. This is more like UNLV. Last week at Hawaii, who's lost 4 straight at the time, appeared to be completely checked out. UNLV goes up 21-6 at halftime, appears to almost have the game in hand. Of course, they fall apart, end up losing at 35-28. UNLV is not going bowling this year, so naturally the only thing they have to play for is this rivalry, the Cannon. Last year was a similar thing in terms of the Hawaii game, the trajectory. I was up there at Mackey Stadium. They dominated that game most of the way, had a nice lead at halftime. Ended up doing nothing in the second half. In fact, I believe they were shut out for the second half. Lost the game 23-16. This time, so despite that loss, though, Lexington Thomas, who I mentioned, I'm just curious if this would be the only matchup problem Nevada may face. He had 129 yards, 2 touchdowns against Hawaii in the losing effort. He's a threat to go the distance every time he touches the ball. UNLV has one of the top-rated rushing attacks in the country at 224 yards a game. Their defense, though, that's a weak point. UNLV gives up 38 points a game. We know that had been Nevada's crotch for the longest time. 38 points a game, obviously extremely high, one of the worst in the country, 121st. I mean, said all that, I don't even know if we mentioned the spread, but we should note Nevada's a 13.5-point favorite with a total of 60.5. Last week, Mark, I actually took San Jose State. It's kind of funny because they're far from a good team. I just felt like a bit of a letdown spot for Nevada, right? It's hard to play. No one goes and watches San Jose State. Nevada's coming off so many big wins. They became bowl eligible against Colorado State. I thought, you know what, I wonder if they just kind of sleepwalked through this one a little bit. They did.
Yeah.
And San Jose State was actually surprisingly competitive with their backup quarterback. They kind of more or less pushed it to a kind of a one-score game type of feel the whole way. Nevada gets out of there with the win, though. They come on down. 2-point favorite at UNLV. Yeah, what do you think? Do the Rebels have a chance?
Yeah, I don't, you know, the line hasn't moved at all. As you said, it's 13.5, 16.5. I mean, the line has not moved at all. So, again, there's a bunch of games today. There'll be some tomorrow morning. They'll be taking some action on this game, certainly. I certainly, you know, Sanchez has got to be out, right, as a UNLV coach?
You would think.
I mean, and it's not like they have a great love affair with him as players. You know, there's some coaches that get fired, and, hey, we're going to win one for the Gipper and go out on the last one here. I mean, I'm back to Nevada on this one, you know. Especially, as you said, they're coming off a lackluster effort. There's no other way to describe it last week against San Jose State. UNLV is playing really well in Hawaii. All of a sudden, they give up 21 points in literally, what, 6 minutes, the last 6 minutes of the game, and lose that one. I think a little air gets taken out of their sail. So I'm looking at the first half under again. Just, of course, what you talked about, rushing. And Nevada defensively has been so good lately. You know, last week it turned in another under in the first half. So my first thought is under in the first half between these two teams. Both of them have a rush offense. And, again, defensively, okay, UNLV's been struggling a little bit, but they can play it. And Nevada hasn't been totally aggressive in the first half anyways. As far as for the game, I would have Nevada. I don't want any part of the Rebels here.
All right. And one thing, again, as far as Nevada is concerned, there's bowl positioning, right? The more games you win, the more leverage you have with the bowl committees. I mean, I've heard all that stuff will play itself out soon. We've got the championship week the following week, and people get their invitations. But sometimes these bowls have their, you know, they have their time and venue set up, and they start offering teams pretty quickly. I've heard that Idaho Potato Bowl might be a preference because, of course, that's nearby by, for Nevada standards to go up to the turf at Boise. And I've heard some other possibilities floated about there, but you become an 8-win team. You know, it gives you a little more leverage, but in this case, you know, UNLV is looking for – this is their bowl game. It's just bizarre you mentioned the coaching because, right, UNLV took a risk, which I like. Sometimes it's just bizarre. You see all these guys in the coaching carousel and recycled guys, you show up everywhere and you wonder, you know, why bother? I felt like back when they did it, yeah, it's interesting. At least you took a risk, though. A guy from a highly rated high school program, who knows, maybe he can, you know, transfer it, well-known guy in the area. But what struck me as so odd is just the trajectory of his career so far. It's just that, the vast disparity between how UNLV can look from week to week, where it seems like he did a decent job bringing in somewhat highly regarded talent. There are times where last year it looked like UNLV was really turning the corner. I mean, they had won a few games in a row, and I believe they ended up missing a bowl game because of that loss to Nevada. They just, right. They fell off the planet. And for some reason, you expect them to take the next step. If I'm not mistaken, and I want to say maybe even after the first year, I thought they might have extended Sanchez's contract. So I don't know what the deal is, like how much they would owe him if they were to get rid of him. But sometimes it's a tough call whether you give that extra year or not. But based on how things are going this year, I don't know, did they give him a, you know, mulligan because of
the injuries? Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure, but I'm also, you know, I wonder, you know, where the brass, where they're thinking is at, because, yeah, at this point you would think, even though they've shown progress at times, it's still not really taking a step forward.
Yeah, well, if they gave him a contract extension, then they're certainly going to keep him around, because the UNLV athletic budget isn't, you know, they're not going to be able to come in and buy him out, okay? And I'm with you. I think the injuries took a big, big toll. I mean, he was able to go out and recruit. I thought he was going to get a few more players from Southern, you know, Nevada. That's certainly a riches as far as that. So I thought they were going to do a little bit better job as far as getting some more players in there. Having said that, you know, what a great opportunity for the University of Nevada to get 8 wins this year. I don't think anybody really thought they were going to get 8. Ken talks about them, that he predicted that, and good for him. But that'd be a really nice, you know, third year for Coach Jay Norvell, that's for sure.
No, I agree. For what it's worth, I also admitted that I did not predict that. I thought I thought a bowl eligible season at best would be a real step forward, and for them to go well past that was a surprising accomplishment. So again, Wolfpack against Rebels tomorrow night, Saturday night, 6:30 p.m. kickoff, CBS Sports Network for the Cannon. We're gonna go after our first commercial break, so please join us again in just a few minutes. William Hill Radio Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Daigle filling in for Ken Barler along with Mark Shannon. Download the William Hill Sports app if you haven't already at www.williamhill.us. That's why you can get a mobile account where you can bet in-game, bet on everything from your phone, your tablet. We do it all the time. I mean, we talk nonstop about the benefits of having the entire William Hill Sportsbook basically in the palm of your hand. So if you've never taken the leap yet, go check it out sometime. You'll be glad you did this time of year. It's perfect, too, especially around the holidays. You want to avoid those crowds and the traffic or whatever. You can just sit back all day and bet with every option and then some that you would have. A couple contests worth noting. The College Football Progressive contest card's up to over $45,000. I don't believe it's been hit all year. That's a $5 card where you pick all the straight-up winners, no spreads involved. Pretty much has every game tomorrow on there, all the rivalry games. Just pick straight-up winners. We somehow clean the board there, $45,000. That's a good overlay. And the Pro Football Contest Progressive going into Week 12, I think that's been hit a couple times this year, Mark, but it resets. It's up to about $22,000. Same thing, $5 every single game straight up, and you win the prize. So those are worth every night we do, or I should say every Friday night we do the show here at the Club Caliva. I put $5. I got one right now.
Right.
I fill out these cards because why not? It's worth a shot. And there's a big overlay, and eventually, the whole reason these things do reset is because someone hits them eventually.
Absolutely. And I know that you and Ken have actually had Bob Martini in, who owns Pizzarina right down the street from us there.
Yeah.
And Bob's a friend of mine. Bob has hit the thing twice
now. I'm jealous. Once in my lifetime, I'll be happy. Stories like that are, you know,
and Bob's
bittersweet.
Bob's hit it twice. So, the old adage, you know, you got to play in order to have a chance to win. And certainly he's done that. And like you said, the reason it gets reset is because it does get hit. So there's certainly worse things you could do with $5.
Exactly. So we're going to go back into the college football slate. A couple games tonight that are kicking off fairly soon that have huge implications. In fact, the day's games were pretty entertaining, but, Mark, these are the ones I've been looking forward to the most. And they got the highest stakes and probably the most entertaining matchups. You have Oklahoma at West Virginia tonight, 5:10 kickoff. Birth of the Big 12 title game on the line. Texas took care of business earlier today. They had to win to get in, and they beat what can be a kind of tough, stubborn Kansas team. Ended up winning 24-17, didn't cover the 15.5 there, but the Longhorns are in. And it's going to be either Oklahoma, so this is winner take all. Oklahoma opened, actually, like -1 in most markets. I heard sportsbooks did that on purpose. They figured steam would come on the Sooners. It did. And so now it's that key number of three. Oklahoma minus three with a total now, just outrageous total for college football, but it had to for these teams, 88 after opening at 85. So they're basically expecting a touchdown a minute, but if you follow the Sooners, that's about what you get. As you saw with the Oklahoma State game a couple weeks ago, just up and down the field. West Virginia is pretty much the same way, although on occasion, I'd say not too often, but on occasion West Virginia can play some defense. We haven't seen so much from Oklahoma just yet. But, again, crazy game. Both teams, Oklahoma has been making the college football playoffs. They were in it last year. They're very much a long shot, I think, to get there again. But they win this one, beat Texas in the Big 12 title game. They've got a case. West Virginia has suffered that loss. It's interesting what Oklahoma State does, right, because they keep on they're the team that's tripping people up this year. Not as good as they've been in years past, but had Oklahoma on the ropes, I think should have beat them, had outplayed them most of the way. Mark, what was so bizarre is Oklahoma State did the same thing a few years ago, three-touchdown dog at Oklahoma. They came all the way back. It had so much momentum, and Gundy just said, forget it. I mean, they were so deflated. He went to overtime. He's like, yeah, it's like having a guy on the ropes and landing the knockout, but you don't want to punch yourself out. I think Gundy knew they were going to win, took him to overtime, won. He had the same opportunity a few weeks ago and went for two. Which it seems like everyone's doing these days. I mean, they don't get it. You can question that, right, armchair it or whatnot. But I just felt like, do the same thing. You kick the one. I think you've got him down. Too bad. But then they turn around last week and knock off West Virginia. And that was sort of bizarre because it felt like they were trailing by 10 or more points the whole way. Didn't look particularly sharp. Come back down 10, end the game on a 14-0 run, and that pretty much, I think, it spoils West Virginia regardless, even if they had won in the Big 12 with two losses. I don't think they're getting into the playoffs. But who do you like in this one?
Yeah, so you talked about a couple things there. Of course, the Oklahoma defense hasn't gotten any better after they replaced, the defensive coordinator, of course, right? They thought all those things were going to happen.
All right. The scapegoat guy after Texas, Mike Stoops, get rid of him. Yeah.
They haven't done anything better defensively. Having said that, this is a...
Yeah, they put Ruffin McNeil, by the way, who as a head coach has had some horrible defenses.
Right.
He was supposed to be the guy. But, yeah, regardless.
So this is an opportunity that I kind of take like here, Josh, and here's why. So you got biggest game of the year for these two teams. The total gets bet up from 85 to 88. And I'm going to duck in and try to get under in the first half here. I got under 45.5 in the first half. I got a good number. And so I'm going to hope that they not slow things down because we know they're not going to do that. But and I'm not going to say go conservative because they're not going to do that. But I just hope that they're not quite as sharp as they can be. And they got a little bit of a hangover. And again, both teams are going for this one tonight. And a lot of times in these tough games, they do become a little bit more conservative. Now, in this situation, conservative to these two teams doesn't mean a lot. But again, I'm going to go under 45.5 in the first half, see if I can get lucky.
All right. And yeah, I just think it's a tough matchup. I like the Sooners a little bit. I don't like laying 3 points. But just historically, they sort of had West Virginia's number. And to me, it's one of those things. Teams play a similar style. I think Oklahoma does it just a little bit better. What's interesting about West Virginia, it's funny how last week they just happened to lose a shootout. Yeah, this happens. But if you saw earlier in the year, they lost to Iowa State 30-14 as a touchdown favorite. In that game, they got 160 yards of total offense. They couldn't even get a first out. To me, that's one of the most amazing performances in college football, what Iowa State did to them, seeing as they're getting 500 yards plus per game. And I would take the Sooners, but it's not a strong play. But I'll see as game time approaches, maybe I'll get in there. But that's the play I would have.
The home road dichotomy on West Virginia is incredible, right? I mean, they're just so much better at home.
Although they won on like that huge play against Texas, like a 50-yard pass.
Right.
That one hurt because I had Texas on that one. But
so if they would have won last week, I mean, you would not have had West Virginia tonight, no matter what, right? You don't like them as much as you like Oklahoma.
Yeah, exactly. But, it's a tough one, though. You're right. And there is one thing about playing in Morgantown for both sports. And one thing you can count on, it's just going to be a wild environment, especially a night game. Or it's going to be 8 p.m. their time as it kicks off. Everyone will be plenty juiced up.
Oh, those people have been out there since 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Right. So that's something to consider. I mean, that's why the line is so tight. Oklahoma, I know, is a real strong public side. So who knows? I mean, there's certainly a case to be made for West Virginia. But, we'll see how it plays out. I might just in-game it and see how it goes, maybe second half. But no real strong play. The second big game that's on deck, 5:45 p.m. kickoff, is Washington State facing their rival, the Washington Huskies. It's -2. The Cougars are favored with a total of 50. You think relatively low for these teams, but actually both teams play quite a bit of defense. Washington has played low all year. It's just too bad. They were picked to possibly go back to the playoff. And I liked him a lot. And it's funny because it seems like Washington's been this huge disappointment. And I think that just – it feels like more so if you bet on them every week because they'll cover the spread like twice all year. But in reality, they've only lost two games, but both were close. Well, they lost to Auburn the opening week, that big showcase game that they – seemed like they had in hand. Auburn got a late touchdown. Then they showed up flat. The most bizarre thing, Cal beat them a couple weeks ago without scoring an offensive touchdown. A pick six decided the game. I expected more out of the Huskies. I don't know, you know, exactly why, but it's just, you know, Drake Browning's a four-year starter, and they made – it's just interesting because they made that playoff his sophomore year and had a bit of an off year last year, but now, you know, they're loaded with talent, everyone back. I think the big thing is if you watch a lot of Washington, Mark, just despite how good those guys are, Myles Gaskin too, so seems like one of the top quarterback running back combos in the country come in this year. But it seems like they've lost playmakers every year, right? From that Final Four team, like a guy like John Ross, who was a first round NFL draft pick, Dante Pettis last year, who set the record for most kick return touchdowns in college football history. They keep losing guys. And there's been some suggestion that Browning's regressed that I'm not sure he has, but at the same time, if you watch him, sometimes it's agonizing. He holds onto the ball long, gets himself in some tough spots, takes some bad sacks sometimes, can have some turnovers. But you know, with that, so to me it's disappointing because I still think Washington's the best team in the Pac-12. Washington State, on the other hand, it's interesting, right? They lost Luke Falk, record-setting quarterback, lost a lot of their top three receivers. They were expected to be about a 6 or 7 win team, and here they are with one loss, and basically they win. The winner faces Utah in the Pac-12 title game. Washington State's on this run, and it shows you, for them to be favored, shows you how far they've come, because the Huskies have dominated this series. They've won 5 straight by an average margin of like 24 points per game. If they have a habit of just beating up on, you know, the Cougars the day after Thanksgiving. Them in an underdog spot, I think it's too good to pass up. So I'm going to do it again, jumping on the Huskies here. Washington State, the reason why it's mostly a dynamic. Washington State's so finesse. Washington historically has game planned pretty well for them. But again, it's in Pullman, the Cougars. Every time I've underestimated them this year, it's cost me.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, Josh. I do like Washington, and I have them tonight. And let's look at Washington's two losses. You know, so Auburn, the first game of the season, who knows what you're going to get the first game of the year, that's for sure. And again, they led the majority of that game. They wound up losing it. If you look at Justin Wilcox, what he's done at Cal, Josh, I don't think it's
underrated.
I don't think it's insane how good he's been.
They were supposed to go 0-11 the first 2 years. I mean,
he has been phenomenal. He has been absolutely amazing what he's done there as far as – and defensively. So losing to Cal, I'm not, you know, so much worried about that anymore because, as you said, Cal's just had a terrific year. Justin Wilcox done a great job there. Having said that, yeah, of course you want, you know, your team to win Cal to score an offensive touchdown. But at the same time, I'm with you tonight. I have the Huskies. I think I got the better coach. I think I've got the better defense. I think we're going to get a little bit more physical tonight. And, again, it's not going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm with you. I've got the Huskies. All we have to do is – I say all we have to do, but, you know, we're getting points, so we don't have to cover any margin. All we have to do is just win this game.
Exactly. And we'll see. You know, this one's fluctuated a little bit. I saw 2.5. Of course, I'd love a key number of 3. It seems like people are on our side. I've seen it go down a little bit. Could just play the money line, but I'm going to keep checking because if somehow the public weighs in on the chalk in the late game, which they might, a full 3 would just be sweet. But otherwise, I think any points at all are just a bonus because I think the Huskies win it outright anyway.
Yeah, and this is, you know, Mike Leach, he's done a few things. So getting 2 points here, him going for the win, trying to do some things, I think, you know, we'll take the 2, like you said. I don't know if it's going to get up to 3 or not, but I certainly like the Huskies' position, let's say that.
All right. Let's talk real quick about a couple of the big rivalry games tomorrow. We got huge implications here. You got Michigan, Ohio State, widely considered the best rivalry in college football. Speaking of domination, though, Urban Meyer, he's come back. He's had Michigan's number for years now. They won. Michigan, you know, has won one game in this series, I think, over about the last 6 years. Ohio State seems to get them every time. As much as Ohio State's been up and down, it's kind of funny. You know, they should have lost to Maryland last week. 2-touchdown favorite, win by 1 point, double overtime.
Maryland went for 2, right?
Yep, that's what happened. They went for 2, didn't get it. Although, you know, it was a play that was open, they could have. It's weird because if you follow it closely, though, it is inconsistent as the Buckeyes have looked. They have one loss, and that embarrassing one to Purdue, who turned out to be a pretty decent team. But it's funny. I think people remember that and say, geez, maybe they're just down. But they've still taken care of business aside from that. Michigan, we know, had the season opening loss to Notre Dame. They've swept the board since then. So this is pretty much the deal. I feel like we all know, you know, Clemson's there, Notre Dame, talking about the playoff pitcher here. Someone from the Big Ten's probably going to go. You know, the winner of this game faces Northwestern in the Big Ten title game, so sort of a dark horse on the other side, not, you know, Wisconsin or Iowa. Northwestern's sealed up their bid there. But here we are, you know, Big House, Michigan, 4.5-point road favorite, total of 56. And to me, Mark, it's just one of those things where, you know, look-ahead spot for the Buckeyes last week. I've seen Michigan's defense is something else. I mean, I know people love offenses and points, but I also like a good defense. It just seems dominant, right? Those teams that just win the game with, you can't even get a first down half the time. They've been beating up teams all year. But given the recent history and everything at stake, I'll take the Buckeyes.
Are you going to?
Yeah. For sure. 4.5 points, I can't turn that down.
Especially at home, right?
Exactly.
Now, defensively, as you talked about, I mean, clearly Michigan has the better defense. We know that. But in these type of games, and again, Urban Meyer being out for those first, the suspension and whatever else you want to call it, you know that they're going to come tomorrow with their best effort. Whether their best effort's good enough or not, we're going to find out. I didn't play the game at all. I mean, again, I would – big games for me, I would look at the under in the first half, hope that Michigan does their thing, hope that Michigan, Ohio State rises a little bit. Because, again, Michigan offensively, they're not going to come in and scare you. So it's not that, you know, you got the better.
Although they've been a lot better this year.
They have. They absolutely have. And that's something that, you know, Jim Harbaugh said he was going to work on, and they have done that. But so my only thought would be under in the first half, you're going to take the dog at home. Good for you.
For
I'll root you in tomorrow. I'll be wishing you luck.
All right. And to me, like you said, that's just one out of principle, right? I mean, Buckeyes have underperformed all year, but given the, again, the history there, and I just feel like the Buckeyes show up in this one. And their defense, Ohio State's, has been suspect. You know, it's a bit of a liability, but like you said, Michigan's not exactly, I mean, they can take advantage of it, but it's not like you're facing a real high-powered offense, so maybe that kind of negates it a little bit. I just feel like it comes down to the wire. How many key numbers do you have there? To me, it'd just be pretty sweet. Even if Michigan goes in there and wins 28-24, you get the money with the dog.
You're walking out with the ticket, yep.
Yeah. So there's a couple more on deck tomorrow morning. Mark, there's one I like. It's kind of funny. It's off the beaten path a little bit in terms of not a huge rivalry, but Miami, the Hurricanes, are playing Pittsburgh, who's recently turned it around. This is sort of a revenge game. Remember last year, the Hurricanes were 10-0, started the season undefeated. They went up and lost to Pitt as a 2-touchdown favorite, had a chance to cap off an undefeated regular season, got dominated. Pitt with a backup quarterback at the time, who Pickett, who now starts for him. The Hurricanes have been up and down. We know they were nowhere near as good as expected. They were supposed to build on it, maybe go to the ACC title game again. They won't. They've been a little erratic all year, but they did pull off a nice win last week against Virginia Tech on the road. I think they're kind of coming back here. Pitt, with that ACC championship berth wrapped up, has nothing to play for. Miami's just -5, and I think the Hurricanes nail them.
Yeah, well, this is a great spot, as you said, because, again, nothing to play for except they remember last year. And having said that, they have picked it up the last couple of weeks. So I like the position that they're going in right now. It's a 12:35 start. Again, I'm with you on this one, Joshua. I'm going to take Miami with you there, and we'll just hope that they get excited about what could have been.
Exactly. We're going to head off to our next commercial break. So join us again in just a couple minutes here for more college football. William Hill Radio Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel here with Mark Shannon from the Club Cal Neva William Hill Sportsbook, where there's a nice crowd gathered here for all the games. You probably hear a little bit of the commotion in the background here, but Mark makes it a more authentic environment with the topics we cover. The clientele here is all about it.
Yeah, and Vautech just walked off with the win against Virginia, so there was some reaction to that. So I think some people at Vautech, they were the dog today, right, Josh, getting 4, 4.5?
Right. I think it closed at 4, 4.5, but also a sweet little money line about +170, so a good rivalry game. It was weird. The Hokies have been awful this year, but you know they'd won four. Actually, I should say the Hokies had lost 4 straight by double figures, had to win this just to stand a chance at a bowl. They're 4-6. They actually had a game that was canceled earlier in the year with Marshall. They have this provisional thing to play. Here's what's funny. Virginia Tech wants to get a bowl so bad. They had a provisional reschedule, meaning like, hey, see what happens here. If we beat Virginia, we want that game. To give them a chance at 6. So now it looks like that game's going to happen next week to give Virginia Tech a chance. Of course, they lost their quarterback early in the season. The backup's a transfer from Kansas. He's been okay, but it's been their defense. It's usually a strength that's just been terrible this year. But they had, as you know, the Cavaliers, they had them down early big and couldn't finish it off and went to OT.
Yeah, and so Vautech gets money. I know you had a winner there, so good for you.
Yep, unfortunately, offset by a couple that didn't go my way. But
hey, that's going to happen. We're not going to win them all. And anybody that thinks that we are, God bless you.
So tomorrow's big slate. We mentioned all kinds of rivalries and things at stake. And, Mark, you mentioned this one before the show. It's kind of an interesting regional thing here. Arizona State, Arizona, they always play on the last day of the year as well. You mentioned some of the dynamics in playing that both have first-year coaches. It's true, Kevin Sumlin at Arizona coming over from Texas A&M. He actually had a pretty loaded and experienced roster. They're expected to be kind of a dark horse to do big things. I think they have like 19 returning starters. Instead, they've done very little. You know, they're going to be lucky to reach a bowl game. They've fallen flat. Herman Edwards is somewhat, it's a curious hire for the Sun Devils. Some people think, well, geez, at least it's outside the box. Who knows? There's also people within college football who just thought it was a farce. Like, this guy hasn't coached college football in 30 years. What can he get done? And Arizona State's actually minus two. They're a two-point favorite at Arizona, total of 64.5. And to me, what do you think's funny? I guess there's someone new wearing the headset or whatever for Arizona State. But every time I watch them, they look like the exact same team I've watched for about 10 years in a row. Same thing as under Todd Graham, where, you know what, at night, this Pac-12 after dark deal, they'll be a 10-point home underdog to somebody, and they'll just obliterate them, and they look like the fastest, most athletic team in the country. Like, wow, what's that? The next week, they'll go on the road and lose by 17 to a mediocre team. To me, Arizona State changed coaches, but they haven't changed their mentality at all. They're just the same team. I don't really know what to expect from this one, except from pretty much the same deal. I mean, they're the road team, and again, it's a day game, which I think matters, because I think the Sun Devils, for some reason, they've been a lot better at night. Arizona hasn't figured much out either, and their defense is really suspect, but I feel like they show up in this one.
Yeah, and if you look, just like you said, with these other rivalry games, I mean, the team that's not supposed to win has normally done pretty well in these things, you know. I like the Herm Edwards hire. Again, you talked about outside the box, and it's refreshing to me that you don't recycle. Now, again, he's certainly been around, okay? It's not like this is his first head job, but at least in college it was a guy that came from the NFL. Kevin Sumlin, they just got off to such a terrible start, and as you said, it just looked like, man, there was just no confidence in him, no confidence in any of the players. The staff got down. They had some problems on the sideline. I'm not going to bet the game. I just, again, I will be watching the score, and maybe, as all of us have, the William Hill app. And that's the best part about it, is that if you have some feel for it, you don't really want to get involved early, you can always take a look at what's going on in the beginning of the game. So not a game that I'm going to bet, but I do lean towards Arizona State a little bit. But having said that, certainly the dog in the series, I know, has been beneficial to be on.
All right. Let's talk about another historic college football rivalry, that being the Iron Bowl tomorrow, Alabama against Auburn, one of those classic matchups. Alabama's, though, already sealed their fate. They're in the SEC title game. They'll be facing Georgia, which, of course, is a rematch of last year's national title game. We know Alabama came up short of reaching that game last year, because on this same day of the season, they lost to Auburn last year. Went in there. Of course, it's a whole different deal. Alabama looks way more dominant, but they went in there as about a six-point favorite, and Auburn not only beat them but blew them out. Auburn was expected to challenge to be in position this year, possibly for the SEC title. They've had a down year. But I think it's interesting, Mark, because there's some talk, some whispers around maybe the Auburn faithful, the Gus Malzahn, could be in jeopardy or whatnot. I always think it's so funny, because if that's the case, who are you going to get to replace him? When in his tenure, they have a national championship. He beats Alabama, I would say, all the time. More than anyone else, though, or just about every other year, they take down the Tide. He has a pretty good record against him. They have had a bit of a down year, though. They had a kid, Jared Stidham, the quarterback, was expected to be a Heisman candidate. They've been down, and yet, again, Alabama's offense looked so powerful early on in the season, but they had a pretty weak early schedule. So now what we've seen, right, against a couple of good defensive teams, LSU and Mississippi State, both held Alabama under 30, so it shows they're not invincible. The defense gives up zero. A defense that had been vulnerable, right? Defense that gave up whatever it was, 35 points to Arkansas. It seemed like they were just going to outscore people in a kind of a reverse dynamic than what you usually see. Suddenly the defense comes around, and you think LSU, geez, maybe if they could hang in there, maybe take them to the wire. And the defense played somewhat respectably, but still, they get shut out. So Auburn here's a 24-point underdog. So you got Alabama, 52.5 is the total. The only real motivation, of course, staying sharp for the SEC title game, the revenge on the mind from losing to Auburn last year. I guess my question to you is, to me, of course, I only consider Auburn here as 24.5 early in the week. You could still get that key number of 24. So many points in a rivalry game. I'd be surprised if the Crimson Tide just demolished them, but then again, they've been doing that to everybody.
Yeah, so all those Alabama backers last week, they ran into the first time all season that they didn't cover the first half against who? The Citadel. of all teams.
Yeah, if you found a line on that. But, yeah. But, oh, yeah, speaking of which, yeah, so somehow the most bizarre things happened to Alabama all year. Tied 10-10 with the Citadel last
at halftime. It's so funny. Week. Because, again, people were just sending it in, and they were getting rewarded because Alabama covered every first half the entire year up till then. Tomorrow's game, you know, Josh, I'm not going to bet the game. Again, the total, Auburn, they just scare me, you know. I mean, as far as getting rid of Malzahn, they signed him to this huge deal. My
a couple
goodness.
Years back. True.
Oh, God. What, 7 years? Like 49
You're in
million?
The ballpark, for
I
sure.
Mean, yeah. I mean, just a huge contract. Now, they said he was in trouble, and then he got a couple wins, even though they weren't against great teams. So they've kind of quieted down a little bit.
And I like him. I mean, for what it's worth. Like I said, to me, same thing with LSU and Les Miles. Great. If you're going to do that, you better make sure you're hiring Urban Meyer next or whoever. I mean, what's Auburn going to do better than him?
Right. No, I agree with you. So tomorrow I'll just sit down and watch. And, again, I have to work tomorrow. I'm sure the game will be on the radio, so I'll be listening to it. And if I can get some sort of angle in-game, I'll certainly jump in then. But I have no opinion going into it.
Okay. One later game tomorrow with some high stakes. We have Notre Dame visiting USC. Huge one for the Irish last week. They've played a pretty tough schedule. Of course, they're an independent with some ACC affiliation, so they play a partial ACC schedule. They've been pretty much rolling through those games, but we know the non-conference, they beat Michigan, they've beaten Stanford, gotten themselves into position where they're pretty much it's a win and you're in type of deal. Last week I thought it was funny at Syracuse because it was in the Bronx. They're just about a 10-point favorite. We know Syracuse has been better than usual for them this year. High-scoring offense. They've been flashy, making a lot of plays. And but I was all over the Irish last week. I've seen Syracuse a lot. Now, this is a terrible matchup for them. They're finesse. Notre Dame is really powerful. And I thought Syracuse, for some reason, was just the underdog du jour last week. Everyone's picking them outright. Right. I said, no, watch. Notre Dame smashes them. They did. And then, but 11.5 points at USC. It's interesting. USC's completely rebuilding. They lost just about everybody, including, we know, the quarterback, Sam Darnold's in the NFL. They lost a lot of key playmakers. So they're pretty much in rebuilding mode. And I, for some reason, again, their popular pick, I think a reputation alone to get to the Pac-12 title game. I knew USC would be pretty bad, and they have been. But one thing I got to say, Mark, it's funny. I didn't even learn more. I've watched USC a lot. JT Daniels is a true freshman quarterback. I think he might have just turned 18. But I didn't realize to watch him one of their games. He went to Matter Day. He should be facing high school competition this year. Actually graduated a year early. He did something to get all his credits done or whatever. It's an early entry. And to me, that's just amazing. I mean, talk about, we know young college basketball players. There's a lot of young kids who excel at various levels, but especially football. That's the most physical sport possible. I just can't imagine. This is a kid who literally is supposed to be playing against high school competition, granted a high level of high school. But there he is starting for USC. I just think it's funny in hindsight. You look back at second game of this kid's college career is against Texas in front of 110,000 people. And he should be playing on Friday nights at high school. So I think he's done as well as possible under the circumstances. They're still rebuilding. But Syracuse proved to be that false underdog last week. Can USC hang with him?
Yeah, I don't know. And the rumors are going on about Clay Helton, too, that he might be out of job.
And it's of course, only his second full year.
Yeah, listen – again, Josh, I'm with you. Why they keep switching around so much and think that they're going to get any sort of continuity in the program, okay? I mean, here's a guy that 2 years ago was good enough to get the job. Now 2 years, now you want to get rid of him? I mean, they've recruited well.
Pac-12 title game last year, championship.
Of course. And as you said, you have a young man who's not even really supposed to be in college yet. So you can imagine the dramatic jump he's going to take next year and how much better he's going to be the following year. As far as the teams themselves, I just don't see SC being good enough. Notre Dame, since the quarterback switch, they're playing much better defense. Defensively, they've been really, really good. And I think SC's a little bit prone to turn the ball over tomorrow. I think Notre Dame will go in there and be more physical. They'll do just enough to win this game. I don't have anything going into it before the game starts. I certainly don't want the SC Trojans at home. And again, I'm passing up some dogs here, but I don't want any part of the Trojans.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough for them to pull it off. We'll see what goes down there. But one thing I think would be interesting is if USC were to win, I like the idea of just seeing the chaos it would set off, right? Because Notre Dame's so assured of it. Their spot is not jeopardized at all, except for a loss like that. Then suddenly you're reopening the door to the possible Pac-12 champion. And
yeah.
I mean, possibly two teams from, who knows, the Big Ten. I mean, I'm just curious to see what would happen if in fact – that door was open. But.
And it's college kids. I mean, all the pressure's on Notre Dame tomorrow, Josh, that's for sure, because everyone knows what's at stake. SC,
right.
You know, playing with the house money, borrowed money, whatever you want to call it. If they get off to a nice start, who knows?
All right. One other game real quick. You mentioned Mountain West implications, and we might as well go with – since it's related to the Wolfpack in a sense, but Boise State with a big game tomorrow. They survived the test a couple weeks back against Fresno State, had to win to keep their Mountain West title hopes alive. Now I believe this is winner take all for a berth in the Mountain West title game. Boise State at home against Utah State. Utah State's much improved as well this year. Boise State -2.5, total of 67.5. Again, I will say in this format, well, put it this way, I've gone against Utah State a couple times this year and it didn't work. They're crazy productive on offense, but in this spot again, I'll take the Broncos.
Yeah, and you know, it's a weird dynamic because Boise State's not even laying home field, what you would think, right, Josh? 2.5.
Right.
Utah State's had a tremendous year, as you've said. Man, that coach has done a good job there. They put in their lumps the last couple years.
Matt Wells, they've been down, but boy, were they up this year.
Oh, my goodness. And as you said, they've been opportunistic and everything else. Again, I'm looking at under in the first half for these two teams. Boise's not nearly as explosive offensively as they have been. Utah State's going to play good defense. Utah State actually is probably a faster-paced team than Boise is right now, which is hard to believe.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Boise State's been more defensive-oriented, kind of grinded out. And they were in trouble a couple weeks ago. They were down 14 to Fresno State in the second half, found a way to do it. So, but interesting game there, Mountain West championship berth on the line, late one. We're going to go off to another quick break here, so please join us again in just a minute. William Hill Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel here with Mark Shannon, and we just went over some college football rivalry games tonight, all day slate tomorrow. We went over some of the key matchups, but we're going to go ahead and move on to week 12 of the NFL slate. Three games for you yesterday on Thanksgiving. And, Mark, a bit of an interesting dynamic there in that the chalk covered all three. It was close in some instances, but, hey, if you're a chalk player sitting around, it was a good day for you. And also, if you played teasers, it would be too, because actually six-point teaser hit on every single side. So if you played a six-teamer, you would have swept the board there. But Bears-Lions led a good portion of the way, right? It was tied there. Stafford pick six ends up being the difference. Bears by 7, 23-16. Cowboys dominated, I'd say, a good portion of the way, but the Redskins, they let Washington back in there. The Redskins didn't take advantage, right? They had a chance to actually get in there, maybe send that game to overtime. Ended up coming up short on a couple late drives, 31-23, so the Cowboys just clip the 7 mark there. And then late game, Saints and Falcons, seems like a ton of points you never see. 12.5, 13 in an NFL game. Saints have just been running away with it. Similarly, I feel like I actually did take a little piece of the Falcons just out of principle. I thought, too many points. And, boy, that was pretty agonizing to see the guy fumble on the one-yard line at, 4 minutes left. And they still, should have covered the spread. But, nonetheless, the Saints get there again. Similar to the Cowboys, just barely clear that hurdle, 31-17. So, all chalk on the Thursday games. But those are in the books now. And, actually, we'll see Cowboys-Redskins went over, Saints-Falcons, and the other ones went under. Did you take any action
so
yesterday?
I had the Detroit Lions, Josh, and I just got to tell you, I was so – I mean, I remember why I don't like Matthew Stafford now.
That would be why.
The two biggest drives of the game, okay, they just get the game gets tied. He comes out and goes to pick six. Now they're driving down. And, again, I realize that the rookie wide receiver didn't do exactly what he wanted to do. So the whole play was messed up. The running back in the back gets chipped, gets blocked. He gets held up at the line of scrimmage, and now the rookie doesn't go to the corner. But you have the football in your hand. Don't throw the ball unless you want to. You could have thrown it away and lived to fight the last at least fourth down. So, again, I have been a supporter once in a while of Matthew Stafford. Yesterday, I thought the Lions were in a great spot with what the Bears had with their having to play with their schedule, and it was just so disappointing, so disappointing. So I was 0-for-1 yesterday.
All right. Let's head into the Week 12 slate here. Looks like there's a couple pretty appealing matchups, but we'll give you the spread, the total, and every single one of them. So first game on our list here, Bills hosting the Jaguars. Probably a sad sentiment in how far the Jags have fallen, Mark, that they're only a three-point favorite here against the Bills, who are just woeful. But Jacksonville appeared to have a spirited effort last week against Pittsburgh. I liked them. Thankfully, I got the right side of that in terms of 5.5 points because it closed 4 and it fell 4. But again, they completely choked away a double-digit lead, let Pittsburgh go in there, get 2 late touchdowns to get the straight-up win, and again, push the closing number. But most of the week, if you had Jacksonville early, you got there. But they're just mired in a bit of a slump that looks like they're not going to get out of anytime soon. But the Bills are bad, too, so any feel on this one?
Yeah, I'm going to take Jacksonville. This is money out of my pocket, and I was with you last week. We both had the Jags. The Jags did everything but win that game. I know the Pittsburgh home road dichotomy. Roethlisberger throws five picks. Of course, two of them gets called back, one for the old famous five-yard, you know, automatic first down, and then the other one was late. They did hit him in the face mask. But the Jacksonville did everything but win that game. And, again, going out on the road here, I'm going to have the Jags come Sunday.
All right. How about Ravens minus 10.5, total of 43 against the Raiders, who are coming off their second win of the year. Not that terribly impressive, but it beats losing because we know they seem to be in the whole tank mode. And Gruden era starts off with looks like a complete rebuild. We know they traded Amari Cooper, Khalil Mack, and kind of just cleaning house there, but found a way to pull one out, probably boost morale last week. But from what I hear, Lamar Jackson will be starting for Baltimore, so I can't imagine that line not moving back a little bit because, hey, you got a rookie, unproven guy in there. Double-figure spread in the NFL is just huge by any standards. You're thinking the Raiders compete for a second straight week.
Yeah, you know, the Raiders have been so disappointing, and I'm not a Raider fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought they were going to be a little bit better. Having said that, you talked about the two big trades. It looks to me like they just kind of hit the team in the middle of their gut, right? I mean, you know, they were planning on Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack being a big part of the team. They're not even on the team now. Having said that, Lamar Jackson last week, their first drive, Josh, they went down and scored the Ravens. He rushed the ball I think he had 10 rushes on that play. The team rushed the ball 10 straight times. I think he had 6 or 7 of them himself. He's certainly getting better. He needs to get a little playing time. As you said, 10.5, I don't want either side of this one. I don't want the Ravens laying 10.5, and I don't want the Raiders.
No, I agree. It's just easy one to pass up there. All right, next one on the list, you have Tampa Bay Buccaneers minus 3 against the San Francisco 49ers, total of 54. The Niners have been, I think, somewhat more respectable than expected after, of course, the injuries to both Garoppolo and then Beathard. You wonder, oh, what's going to happen? It turns out the third stringer in Mullins isn't, you know, that bad. He's kept him in games. That one Thursday night game, speaking of which, against the Oakland Raiders. The Buccaneers have just been inconsistent. You know, they started off the year with a great run of victories, but of course they've kind of receded to the where you expect them to be, to the bottom of the NFC South. They're just minus 3 here. Yeah, I think it's a tough call, but I wonder if the Niners, you know, if they are just hit the wall a little bit, Mark, I would take the Bucs here, I think.
Yeah, so you talked about it. The Thursday night, Mullins comes out. Nobody knows much about him. Of course, he broke Brett Favre's records at Southern Miss. People that follow football knew about him.
Right, I'd heard of him, of course.
Right, yeah, so he comes out. He's dynamic now. The Giants have a couple extra days to look at some film on him and do some things. And they don't play nearly as well against the Giants. Good spot for the Giants that particular Sunday. They get the Niners. I'm going to come back with the Niners here, coming off the bye week. I think I got the better coach in Mike Shanahan. I'm not sure what the Tampa Bay's doing with the quarterbacks. I mean, as soon as, you know, they're shuffling him out. Dirk Cutter has been disappointing. I thought when they hired him, you know, they were all excited to get rid of Lovie Smith. Jameis Winston talked about how much he, you know, liked him as the offensive coordinator. Again, he hasn't done great things down there in Tampa Bay. I'll take the points here, Josh, so you and I will be on the opposite one on this one.
All right. Like you mentioned, yeah, Cutter, we'll see what happens. But he was hired specifically to work with Jameis Winston because he was supposed to be this innovative offensive mind and hasn't exactly worked out, but Jameis Winston hasn't held up his end of the deal either.
That's true.
Let's move on to the Eagles hosting the Giants. The Eagles are 5.5-point favorites, total of 46. And, again, coming off that Super Bowl win, they've struggled a lot. It looked like they turned the corner a few weeks ago. The Eagles strung a few wins together. They thought, hey, they got a chance, right? The NFC is wide open. Washington was sitting there. No one really seems to, you know, fear them. And yet with a couple big opportunities to get right back in there, the Eagles have choked. I mean, they lost a touchdown favorite 2 weeks ago, Sunday Night Football, completely outplayed by the Cowboys, who are now in first place in the NFCs. They had a chance on a big stage to, you know, get a huge win at New Orleans last week. No contest, wire-to-wire blowout. Now, I mean, I don't even know how thin their playoff chances are, except extremely slim. It'd be probably looking at the NFC wild card, I don't know what it would take. But we know the Giants have been really disappointing, too. In the first matchup a few weeks ago, Philadelphia dominated at New York. Can they cover 5.5 here? I probably want no part of it, but I'd probably take the Eagles if I had to.
Yeah, this is the spot, Josh, where you get back in your own element, so to speak, right? I mean, the Giants have just been disappointing. Now they're coming off, you know, a nice win against the Niners, so they get a little bit of credit there. As you said, the Eagles last week, they were, I'm not going to say people are trying to beat the Saints, because my goodness, forget that idea, okay? That's been unsuccessful. But last week, the Eagles weren't even hanging around. I mean, they're getting points, and as you said, they couldn't get out of their own way. They had one drive the entire day. Defensively, they're just terrible this year. Now, they have a lot of injuries going on the defensive side as well, because certainly Jim Schwartz hasn't forgotten any less football than he's always been. He's just not being able, as the Eagle defensive coordinator, they're just not being able to be as aggressive. They certainly can't, when they are aggressive, they can't cover people one-on-one. And all those teams have taken advantage of it. I'm with you. This looks to me like, the Eagles, I don't think they can get to the playoffs this year, but this looks like at least a spot where they can get a little bit of confidence and feel good about themselves. I would have the Eagles here in this one.
All right. Next game on board here, Cincinnati Bengals at home, -3, total of 46.5 against the Cleveland Browns. Tough one to peg. We know what's going on with the Browns. They fired the coach a few games back. They've been up and down since. A real nice third best game of the year a couple weeks ago and blowing out the Atlanta Falcons. The Bengals started off impressive. It looked like they were going to exceed expectations, maybe challenge for the conference title. They've fallen off with a thud. Tells you it's basically a pick 'em, on a neutral site, that the Bengals are just -3 here. Yeah, it's a pass for me. What do you think?
Yeah, again, I would look to the Browns here. The Bengals, as you said, man, they got out of the blocks. Everyone's all excited about them for a little bit. The Browns, they had some expectations, right? And, Baker Mayfield, he comes in on that Thursday night. Since then, he's kind of been quiet. Of course, they get rid of the offensive coordinator. They get rid of, Hugh Jackson. So they've certainly been struggling. Again, the Bengals, to me, they're not even laying home field here. They're -$1.60 on the money line, which is not even what you're supposed to be laying. I mean, the Jags are laying $1.70 on the road as the favorite on the money line. So give me the Browns here, and I'm going to hope that they, keep – they're coming off the bye, so I'm expecting a little bit better effort out of them this week. And I think the Bengals are just beat up, and they had their day in the sun, and they're just going down.
All right. Next game on the deck here, we have New England Patriots -10 against the New York Jets with a total of 47. We know the Jets, speaking of coaches in trouble, Todd Bowles, it's funny. Sometimes it looks like his team plays has better results than they should. The kind of marginal team that seems to play hard for him. And then you get in that situation where they get blown out by Buffalo. At home as a 7-point favorite, and Buffalo signing guys off the cow ship immediately come in and play quarterback for him. They keep doing that, and so that's a pretty tough loss to get past. Sam Darnold's out again this week. Patriots, we know, have seemed to, they've had their share of issues in terms of, they usually turn it on late season, win a bunch of games, but they personnel-wise, they've been pretty banged up. But they seem to have the Jets' numbers. 10's a huge spot. Tough call for me. I'd probably only play New England.
Yeah, the Jets have actually covered, last year at home against this team. They almost beat them. As you said, though, man, Todd Bowles, I really do like him. I know he comes over as a defensive coordinator from the Arizona Cardinals, where he was really, really good. I know all season you have not been a big Sam Darnold fan.
Not at all.
And you were wondering why they were going to throw him to the wolves, so to speak, Now, he hasn't even been able to play, unfortunately. At least if you're going to lose with a guy that's going to be there for you, a couple years from now that you're hoping. But because of his injuries, he hasn't even been able to be in there. So the Jets are losing, and they're not even getting any experience for their young guy. This, as you said, I mean, the Patriots here, this is where they look like they rise. Is Gronkowski in this week? Do you know, Josh?
I saw a report earlier today that I believe said he told the media he's going to try to play.
So nothing definite there for
right, sure.
Yeah.
Right. So keep checking your injury reports.
And again, so now I look at the total conference game, both teams coming off, Patriots trying to get healthy here. Boy, would love to play this game under a little bit. I know it was very cold yesterday. In New York, it was the coldest on record that the Macy's Day Parade started at. There wasn't any wet, any moisture in the air or anything, but I know it was very, very cold. I'm going to try to duck in and out here and get under in the first half here. I'm going to hope the Patriots are a little bit sluggish coming off. I'm going to hope the Jets have a renewed interest. So I'm going to go under 23.5 in the first half.
All right. Next game on deck, you got the Carolina Panthers -3.5, total 47 against the Seattle Seahawks. Bit of an interesting dynamic here. The Panthers have, I thought for a while, they were kind of overlooked in terms of their, pretty solid team. It seemed like they weren't getting a lot of respect in the spreads and whatnot. They've fallen off a little bit, though, because they've lost a couple games. They lost at Detroit last week in a game they probably shouldn't have. And the Seahawks, same thing. They were expected to be completely rebuilding, but they've been better than expected. But their playoff hopes are almost all but shot. But still, 3.5 shows you, to me, it shows some respect for Seattle, because I think this is a pretty good spot for Carolina. Seattle's done all they can with their personnel, but I would take Carolina here.
Yeah, Carolina undefeated at home. These two teams have played each other, you know, the last couple times in this matchup, and I know it's been a field goal game either way. Each team has won one. I mean, it, like I said, it's been a field goal game each and every time. Seattle coming off the big win on Thursday night a week ago, Josh, so they've had a couple extra days. I know Carolina was disappointed in their effort last week against Detroit. That was part of the reason I was on Detroit yesterday. They had no turnovers last week, and, of course, we'd already talked about how Matthew Stafford took care of that by himself. So the Panthers undefeated at home. I'm looking at the Panthers here for a good rebound spot. This is actually money out of my pocket. Go ahead and give me the give me the Carolina Panthers, and I hope that they keep that unbeaten streak at home alive.
Yep, I like it as well. So we're going to go off to our final commercial break here. We'll wrap things up with Week 12 of the NFL just a couple minutes, so join us again. William Hill Sports Show, ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the last segment. This week's William Hill Sports Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel, Mark Shannon with you, going through Week 12 of the NFL slate. We're running down spreads and totals for every game, giving some leans, and we're about halfway through an abbreviated Sunday slate because of the three-game Thanksgiving schedule. Mark, next one on our schedule here, though, is Colts -8 against the Dolphins, total of 51. You know, it's an interesting game. You know, the Dolphins actually started out of the gate better than expected, but they've fallen apart a little bit and actually have the worst, you know, defense in the league, whereas the Colts, they're coming on a little bit. I liked them last week against Tennessee. That was a great spot. The whole world was on the Titans, right? Short memory after their upset of the Patriots. I had a feeling it was a good spot for the Colts, and they won by blowout. Having said that, this spot here, delay a touchdown over – you know, I don't see it. This is one of those things. I think sometimes there's sneaky value on the Colts recently. This isn't one of those spots. Honestly, I would take Miami.
Yeah, so the beginning of the year, the Colts offensive line was the worst in the NFL. I mean, by all the numbers, they were just awful. The last 6 weeks, Andrew Luck hasn't been touched, Josh, has not been knocked down one time in 6 weeks. Just goes to show you how the offensive line, again, they had some injuries early. Yep. And, of course, now he's just taking advantage of that. And as you said, they're flinging it all over the field. They've been in good spots. They've had some really good situations. This looks to me like a little bit high watermark to me. You know, the Dolphins, are one thing they can do is play a little bit of defense. Again, they struggle offensively. But people fall in love with things, and I would have the Dolphins here before. It's no money out of pocket for me, but I would have the Dolphins getting the points rather than the Colts laying.
Yeah, I agree. It's just – one of those things, an NFL game, that's a huge number.
I mean, just looking at it, it looks too easy, right?
A little bit.
We both know, hopefully, that when things look too easy, run, duck, cover, be bold, and take the other side.
Exactly. So next game is Los Angeles Chargers -12, total of 43.5 against the Arizona Cardinals, who we mentioned last week, a competitive game with Oakland when they came back from a deficit, took a late lead. Oakland hit a field goal at the horn to beat them. You actually thought, yeah, they're pretty bad. I was impressed with the Cardinals, though. A couple weeks ago at Kansas City, they actually hung in there pretty well. They're right in the game. Their defense has stepped up pretty good. Rosen just actually had like a late, I'd say pick six, but close to it. They score in the next play. But they were, you know, right within one score. I thought, geez, maybe they're building something here. We know the Chargers, they were the huge favorite to win the AFC West before the season started. They've been under the radar because of success of the Chiefs so far. But they're actually coming off a loss. They got clipped at home last week against the Broncos. Kind of caught off guard there. But now, again, close to 2 touchdowns, a huge spread by NFL standards. I probably couldn't lay it. I'd probably have to consider the underdog.
Yeah, and the only thing that, as you said, I like the Cardinals defensively. They're certainly coming on. And again, they like their new head coach. He's had a few growing pains up and down. The biggest thing has been Josh Rosen, as you said. But I'm okay with that because you know what? They drafted him and they're playing him. So unlike Sam Darnold, they're giving Josh Rosen a chance and he's getting in there. And again, since the third game of the season, he's been their starter. The only thing, he can put them in some bad spots. The Chargers coming off, as you said, they were up NFL football game is 60 minutes. They were up 57 minutes last week. And all of a sudden, Denver gets them literally on the last play. So they'll come back. Laying the 13, I wouldn't do that. Again, I don't really want the dog here because sometimes Josh Rosen puts the Cardinals in some bad spots. So I'm just going to wait and see how the Chargers react and base that look to see what they do for the next 4 weeks following this effort against the Cardinals. We'll see what they do.
All right. Next game on deck, you have the Pittsburgh Steelers -3 with a total of 46.5 against the Denver Broncos, who we just mentioned come off that upset against Chargers. A big win for them. The Steelers are one of the hottest teams in the league. We know they've been, you know, their offense has gotten going. They've been blowing out a bunch of opponents. I actually thought it might be a big flat spot last week against the Jags, which it appeared to be. It seemed like we saw that coming. It was a good situational spot to capitalize on. But even with that, they pulled it out. It's one thing to come out flat, but they still found a way to win. So, like, anytime you do that on the road in the NFL, it's a pretty impressive thing. I think the spread here suggests, you know, is this where it dries up, though? You would think it seems like a bit of a moderate number. Is this where they finally hit the wall? Is this the time to play Denver? I would think the spread's kind of telling you it's time to take the Broncos.
Yeah, and what you brought up, Josh, was really important. The fact that they struggled last week, but yet they came out and won, so they're on the tightrope. They don't get in trouble for it. They don't pay the price. Give me Denver at home this week. I know it was Denver's best effort last week against the Chargers. Now hopefully we can build on that a little bit. And again, when teams win and they don't have to pay the penalty for not playing well, we know the home-road dichotomy between Roethlisberger. I mean, for a long time, he was under 100 yards. Now he wound up going over 300 because those last two drives. There was a big part of that first half where he was 1-for-7. He had one completion for 7 yards. So give me Denver at home here getting the points. I'm with you. I like the Broncos in the spot.
All right, Sunday night game here, we NFC North battle. We have the second week in a row. Minnesota's on Sunday Night Football. The Minnesota Vikings -3.5, total of 47.5 against the Green Bay Packers. Now the Vikings had been on a bit of a run lately, but they missed their chance. Last week's big game against Chicago was for the NFC North lead. The Vikings win that. They take control of first place and maybe go from there. But instead, by and large, I mean, it came down, it ended up getting kind of tight at the end, but by and large, Chicago dominated the game, held a pretty commanding lead. The Vikings finally strung a couple late drives together, but it was still mostly, you know, futile. I mean, that they scored, whatever, I think inside a minute, that had an onside kick that they didn't get, but Chicago appeared to be the better team. We know the Packers have fallen off. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has taken, you know, some heat in terms of, you know, his performance against last week against Seattle, which I think is fair. I mean, sometimes you wonder, does he get a pass? I thought the last couple of drives against Seattle, he missed some clearly open throws, and that was just bizarre. It felt like a game Green Bay should have won. They dominated early. I think they went up 14-0 and fell apart. So both teams, I feel like, you know, by and large, it's kind of NFC North elimination game. Vikings -3.5 seems like the right number, although, you know, with that extra hook, maybe you consider the underdog. Who you like?
Yeah, I like the Vikings here at home. Now, again, Green Bay, they're undefeated at home, and they're winless out on the road. So they're going out on the road. Again, the Vikings, as you talked about, Josh, they had a spot last week against the Bears. The Bears are really good. I mean, they've proven that. But I'm going to have the Vikings in the spot. I think defensively they have not played well the last couple of weeks. I think they get after Aaron Rodgers. I think they do just enough offensively, but defensively is where it's going to lie with the Vikings. We certainly know that when they're playing well, that's what they're relying on. So give me the Vikes at home. This is one of these teams is going to be eliminated for sure. It's whoever wins going to keep their chances alive and keep going, and I think the other one's going to be looking, sitting on the outside looking in.
All right. Your Monday night game has the Houston Texans -6, total of 41 against the Tennessee Titans, who it's kind of funny. The Titans just have this reputation that they're just kind of giant killers. Every time you look up, it's like, whoa, what's that? They beat a team outright as an underdog. You didn't see that coming. And then week to week, I mean, they did it in Dallas. They did it against New England. They did it, you know, at Jacksonville at the point where they're a 10-point underdog. They beat the Texans earlier this year at home as a 3.5-point dog. Now the roles are reversed, though. The Texans have since gone out and won 7 straight. So, again, they're one of the hottest teams in the NFL. They're laying a touchdown here. It's a tough call, Mark, but if you want to take the trajectory of what we know about Tennessee, it would seem that the Titans are the play. I don't want to overplay that hand, though, because the Texans are hot, but they've never performed particularly well as a big spread favorite. A total of 41 would suggest not expecting a lot of separation. So if it came right down to it, I'd be on the underdog, but how do you feel?
Yeah, these two teams, they're the same, right? I mean, every time they get put in a big spot, they underperform. When you don't expect them, they come up with a big effort. I mean, they are difficult to predict. And as you said, that 6 points looms pretty large with a total of 41. Division game, I'm with you. I mean, I'd like to have the Titans in the spot. They've been up and down all season. The Texans have been hot. Owner Bob McNair died today. So I don't know what that plays into the thing for the Texans, but I'm with you. This is the same team. They've struggled. I can't get a read on either one of them. So no money out of pocket, but for the sake of the show, give me the 6 points in the Titans.
All right. So, again, that's your Monday night game, Texans against Titans, Texans minus six. Total of 41, Monday night, 5:15 kickoff on ESPN. So that does it for this Week 12 NFL slate. Now, we often give out picks at the end of the show, but Ken Barler isn't here tonight. But he's been texting us and telling us what he likes or whatnot. But he also is going to put stuff on his the Kenny B ESPN handicapping page. So if you go there, you know, I don't even have mine sorted out yet, Mark. But Ken Barler always rounds him up. He gets everybody, including, you know, it's been contributors from the show and including usually sometimes some special guest handicappers, whatnot. If you follow that page, which Ken has actually done a lot of hard work on lately, you'll see he always posts all the opinions that we have going on, and I'm sure he'll do it again. So eventually I think I'll probably end up, you know, texting him the picks. He'll post them. But Kenny B's ESPN Sports Handicapping Show, if you haven't checked it out, please do soon, because I know Ken appreciates the support there, and we've actually been getting a lot of followers, and the updates have been coming regularly. But to recap again tonight, the Wolfpack in action all weekend in the two major sports. So 7 p.m. coming up, tip time, Fox Sports 1 for the championship of the Las Vegas Invitational against UMass, with Nevada the 14.5-point favorite, total of 156. And then Pac football tomorrow down in Vegas against UNLV, CBS Sports Network, 6:30 p.m., Nevada 13.5-point favorite, total of 60.5 for the Cannons. So Wolfpack in action all weekend long. Make sure you check out those games. William Hill Progressive jackpots up to $45,000 in college, over $21,000 in pro football. So thanks for joining us. Come back and join us again next week. William Hill Sports Radio Show, ESPN 94.5 FM.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley.